Okay.
Roscoe,
we have just watched season 2, episode 18 of ReZero. What are your thoughts?
I have become a detective this episode. There are wires and strings pointing everywhere inside of my room to various points and evidences that have led me to very, how would you say, controversial opinions, which is good because, you know, controversial opinions are always accepted on the internet, right?
Yeah, that's the best place to put out your opinions on the internet. Oh, man. Yeah, man. I think this whole episode was like that It's Always Sunny image, where it's like the dude just frankly trying to figure out where the mail goes. My initial thoughts were like, I was the guy that was complaining like, hey man, I wish the series would pick up, and like I hope more things happen. And I got to this episode, I was like, wait, slow down, wait a minute, stop saying that stuff, please, wait a minute, I want to know what's going on. Why isn't no one explaining anything? There's too much happening. I wish everything would slow down. I was just so surprised how much information they threw at us and like not explain anything. They were like, oh yeah, here's this. All right, they got to move on, man. We got to do this trial.
Yeah, there was just so many side comments and small conversation points. They just said out of nowhere with no explanation, no preface, and they just left in the air.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. But yeah, so we have to start the beginning because there was just so much stuff that happened. So the way this starts off, it's Subaru and the gang kind of outside the trial. What's the Lolita's name is?
Beatrice.
No, not Beatrice. The other one.
There's like Izu? Two. Yes. Oh, Rizu Mayer. That's the original.
Yeah, Rizu. Yeah, Rizu Mayer is the original. But like one of the Rizus were saying like, since they did a trial, they have a memory from the original Rizu. We get a flashback of the sanctuary when the Witch of Greed was alive. And she pretty much was friends with Beatrice, which is crazy.
Yeah, we find out, yeah, that they are friends and that Beatrice, as usual, isn't just cold to Natsuki. Apparently, she's cold to pretty much everybody.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, it's super interesting because the Witch of Greed sees Beatrice as her daughter, like somewhat like her daughter, but Beatrice definitely sees the Witch of Greed as her mom.
Yeah, like Beatrice and like the Witch of Greed's relationship is like a do nothing dad that's like is just hasn't fully accepted that their kid is there. So like when they're walking around inside the mall and like somebody stops to talk to their baby, or like, he's like, yeah, you know, she's kind of like my kid.
Yeah.
Like that. That's a sort of disattachment that the Witch of Greed has.
Yeah. Yeah. But it makes sense because we already know she doesn't feel any emotions. Yeah. But like, I guess like my first thing is like, she said something surprisingly deep to Beatrice. And like, do you think that? I guess it's making me question how detached this person is. Maybe it's just like more of like, hey, this person's just really good at convincing people that she has emotions and stuff like that. But she's like, she told like a Beatrice like something about along the lines of like saying like, just because you're special doesn't mean like you should treat like people bad or something like that. I can probably look up like the exact wording, but I remember something generally like that was said.
Yeah, she said something like that, like, you are made for, like, a special reason, and just because you're made for the special reason doesn't mean you should behave to people like how you're talking to this, like, girl. But, you know, we have to remember that the Witch of Greed seemingly locked the Beatrice up inside of a castle and just told her, hey, somebody's gonna come by that can help free you.
But there was no real person. She just
seemingly. She just did it. She just did it. It wasn't even a semen.
We don't know what like the full reason for that was.
True, but like it's just based off her reaction to it. It was just kind of like, I kind of want to see what happened.
Yeah, she is like the most deadbeat dad ever.
Yeah. All right, so we get this scene, and pretty much Izu and Beatrice become friends. And the other thing that needs to be mentioned here is Rosario, when he was young, was in there too. Yeah, Roswell. He was there. He was there. He was alive during that time. He knew the Witch of Greed. Is that where he got his book?
Well, it seemed like it was up in the air about that, because it seems like they said either Roswell or they said Roswell of several generations ago.
I guess, but like I'm guessing, like do you think those two people? You think it's like a? Do you think there's any difference between that Roswell and this one?
Oh, that's definitely Roswell. I don't know the full extent of like what they meant by that, but that's for sure at least the will of Roswell. Which kind of goes into some of my theories later on.
Yeah. Well, I think I know you said this like I think last episode, or I don't know if you said it on a show or not on a show. I think you said it on a show, but you were saying that Biasu.
Oh yeah, this is off air. This is off air. We had this conversation.
Yeah. So yeah, pretty much it was just saying like Biasu and Rosario being very similar as like. I don't know how to quite put it, but like they seem like they have like a similar path. And if we know Biasu can live for a super long time, you know, he has lived for a super long time and he can continue living for a super long time. Why not Roswell? And this kind of leads into the spirit conversation that I'm thinking you want to bring up.
Oh like, yeah. There's like several different levels to this. So yeah, we can jump into it now if you'd like.
Yeah, we can. Generally, I was just saying, like, could Roswell and Biasu be these kind of spirits, and this is why they're, like, able to live so long? It also leans into something else that I am thinking, but let me hear what your thoughts is, because I know you have, like, a theory that you want to say.
Well, the first notion that I had of maybe them being connected was pretty loose. I was like, man, their design seems very similar. And then I was like thinking about their character. We had a conversation about their character. Is like they both are insane in their own way, and they both seem to have a desire that drives them to behave in erratic's not the word, but very manipulative, very like lunatic like ways. It's a little bit more noticeable with Beetlejuice than with Roswell, but you know, we have to remember that this guy is literally willing to risk his life, also the success of like Subaru, so that he can get whatever he's after, just so that like a version of Roswell can see his goal fulfilled.
Yeah,
even if that means causing the Puckpocalypse, if that means like murdering everyone that he pretends to care about multiple times, like that in itself is like a kind of like insanity. So I did notice that connection. You know, then with this new thing, we find out that they're both seemingly very, very old. And then there was just a small thing that I noticed. It was a very small thing that sort of really put two and two together. Well, first I'll back this up and say that, like, one, we don't know a lot about Beetlejuice, but we do know enough about Roswell to know that Roswell is in a family. So this opens up a question. If he is a spirit, like Beetlejuice, can spirits have families? And what does that mean for the rest of the show? Could Beetlejuice be a Mather like Roswell? Second is that, I don't know if you noticed, if you caught this, but in this episode, Roswell doesn't have the different. He doesn't have the Sharingan, if you know what I mean. He doesn't have that little like yellow eye that he has.
Yeah, I didn't notice that. I just assume like since he was younger, he doesn't have that those like I don't want to say ability or anything like that. But like, yeah, I did notice that his eyes were different.
Well, here's a question: when we're kind of skipping a little bit later, but like when Beetlejuice like got his powers, did his eye color change?
Yes. And there's a specific thing that the Witch of Vanity wanted to see. Like, she's like, let me see those like beautiful eyes. I'm pretty sure his eye. Yeah. Those crimson eyes. I'm pretty sure she was like, wanted to see like what would happen when he took this, which I think it looks, it's the exact same thing that's in Subaru. That like little knots of like black hands or strings or whatever. I'm assuming this is the sloth factor. I'm like pretty sure that is the sloth factor, and he like eats it and becomes sloth. I guess I think that's like we get to see where Biasu becomes the Archbishop of Sloth.
Yeah, I'm looking at pictures of him earlier, and it does look like he has crimson eyes there as well. Maybe they changed a little bit more later on. I'm wondering if maybe that is like a sign of a witch factor, and maybe Roswell has one as well.
Well, what you call it? Wouldn't we see these signs in a Subaru if we're looking for like a witch factor? Because like Subaru definitely has one in him. I'm pretty sure the knots in his things is the same sloth factor that was in Biasu.
Yeah, but he hasn't like released his factor all the way.
He hasn't unlocked his nine tails.
Yeah. I mean, this is just a theory, man. This is just a theory. Yeah.
It's just a theory.
An anime theory.
Don't tell Matt Pat. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, maybe like it kind of works with something else that I am thinking, but I will get to that soon. So I have something that might ride into this too. Before we move on from this like beginning cutscene of Beatrice and Rizu and the Witch of Greed, is there anything you want to say about this scene? Is there anything else that you want to like you've been thinking about that?
Yeah, there was a few things that I noticed on my second viewing. One was in the flashback, we don't see a temple. I'm wondering if the temple is constructed before or after the whatever is going to happen, whatever is going to befall the collapse that one of the mayors mentioned. I'm wondering why is Beatrice special? It seems like Greed, like the Witch of Greed, has a plan for her. That doesn't seem to just be sending her into a castle and waiting for some random person to pop up that she doesn't know exists. I'm also wondering if Betty's like depressive state that we see in some of the earth, like the last time we see her, where she's like, where we have that scene where she just wants to die. I wonder if it has something to do with how Ryuzu Mayor gets encased in that, like, or becomes a part of that project that Greed makes, where she tries to make the perfect person. I wonder if like somehow this is all her fault, or she feels that this is somehow all her fault. Do I have another question?
That could explain some stuff.
Trying to think, what am I looking for? What is my other question? Just what is the true reason for the sanctuary? Does Beatrice have any part in that? Yeah, those are all my questions.
Okay. All right. Well, we can like move on to the next scene. So we get that and pretty much like Rizu is like telling the story. The group is like talking about it. Before we like get into the next scene for real, there's a small scene where Subaru like openly admits to the like the group there that he has like met the Witch of Greed, and people were extraordinarily chill with it. I thought people would have been way more like thing, especially Rem. I thought Rem would have been more like surprised. She was surprised, but like her reaction would have been like stronger, and her reaction not being so strong makes me like question Rosario more in a way. How I guess, like, I always saw Rem as like an ignorant party of like what Rosario might be up to or what he might be like doing, but like, how much did she really know? And is she just that fateful?
She butted in real fast with that whole several generations.
Yeah.
Quote. So I get the feeling that she has at least a decent understanding of what's going on.
Yeah. But I think that was the last like interesting thing that happened there. I guess it's only the first 3 minutes. So we get back into like the trial and back to Amelia. And we're like right out back into that scene. We meet the Archbishop of Greed, like talking his shit, saying like, "Hey, how dare you? How dare you try to flick dust at me? Flicking dust at me is disrespectful. And when you disrespect a man, you don't disrespect him. You disrespect his space. And then when you disrespect his space, how can you trust that space? And if you can't trust that space, I could die. And how dare you do this? How dare you threaten my life?" So yeah, I don't know. I fucking love this, like, increasingly build up of like taking something that was super small or inconvenient to like the extreme. I love like how the character does that.
Yeah, he seems more, doesn't it seem, he seems less greedy, less like greed would fit him more, and it seems more like pride would be a better description.
I could see that. I know like in the first episode of this season, I like how he explained himself, where he was like saying like, he's kind of a nihilist in a way, because he's like, he's never satisfied because he's so greedy. He was like saying that in the first episode where he's like, it's not kind of worth me. It's not worth me doing anything because I'm never like going to be satisfied. But yeah, I could definitely see like he does come off of like very, very prideful. And, you know, maybe it's just generally like, you know, the seven deadly sins generally bounce off each other. And like greed, a lot of people can argue greed is like all the sins in a way, like all the sins are greed just in different ways.
Was there a witch of pride, or is that just the witch of vanity?
The witch of pride, I think, is the blonde. No, that's the witch of rage. Witch of pride is the green haired that like made Subaru like made Subaru gave her a hand. Yeah, so I forgot her name, but yeah, she definitely exists. I think we were kind of right where there are more than these seven witches. Sin, I think the Witch of Vanity is a totally different witch.
Mm.
But yeah, I don't know. I think that character is just super interesting, and I like how he gets super pissed off out of nothing. But yeah, we meet him, and he quickly introduces this Witch of Vanity, and her name is Pandora. And she seems fucking terrifying, for lack of a better word. She's like the right amount of nice, but like she's too nice. And pretty much they have this like I want to say discussion, but it's not really a discussion. It's pretty much a fight. Immediately, Mother Fortuna tries to attack poor Pandora. She hits her multiple times, but Pandora seems fine. And pretty much they kind of recognize that like they're gonna lose this, so Biasu tells Mother Fortuna to get Amelia out of there, and she kind of listens to him, and she says she'll be back. So she takes Amelia and like runs off with her, and then we get this whole scene of like they start talking about the church, which is something super interesting, right? I don't know who leads it or like what's the hierarchy in it, but like it definitely comes off as at the point where you first meet, like when we're talking about Biasu before he like eats the sloth factor, he is definitely like not a important person at all in that church. And I guess like the Archbishop of Agreed and Pandora both outrank him, because he was like the church told me I could do this. And he was like, nah, man, that doesn't matter. I do what I want and I have permission. Cause look at this, Vanity told me I could do it. So like, I guess like, do you have any questions about like that church structure or like what they mean by this church?
Well, we learned a few things, in this show. We learned like later on an offhand remark that, Cornelius brought some of his followers. So we were speculating yesterday about whether or not Cornelius just came alone and, whether that was like part of his thing. Like, I think we talked a little bit offhand how that would make sense because he's just greedy and he would naturally just want to get rid of his disciples. But it seems like he has his own sect of the church. But he, what was his name? Beetlejuice is still an archbishop of Greed when we pick up.
What you call it? Who? Beetlejuice?
He's still the archbishop when they started.
Did they say that there anywhere?
Yeah. Pretty sure they said that.
Yeah. Well, like he does lose it when the Witch of Vanity.
Oh, not Archbishop. He's the Archbishop of Sloth.
Oh, does he say that? I would have to check, but all right, I'll just go with your word on that.
Maybe I could be wrong. I mean, she does name him Sloth.
Yeah, she names him. Oh, go ahead.
I was saying, so yeah, that doesn't necessarily, that wouldn't, I was sort of confused by that, so you could be right. Maybe I just assumed.
Yeah, from my understanding, I think when she names him Sloth, after he eats the factor and she names him Sloth, that's when he gets the title of Archbishop of Sloth. But I don't know. Either way.
Oh, go ahead. I mean, that opens like so many different questions. Like one, like why do just people just keep calling people slothful? Like, well, they're actually trying to do stuff. Like he wasn't being slothful at all. And then two, who exactly was Beetlejuice under then? Whose authority was he acting upon?
Yeah. Well, do you think it's like a more of a thing of like, hey, you are the controller of this power, and that is why you are called Sloth? Like, it's, can the title be way more about like, hey, you have the Sloth factor in you, so therefore, you are the Archbishop of Sloth? Is it like thing like that?
She said, Pandora said, or no, I think it was Cornelius said that, like, it really pissed him off that Beetlejuice was chosen by the Witch Factor to bear that. Maybe, sorry, I just remembered, there was an offhanded comment by Beetlejuice, like, when he decided to take on the Witch Factor, where he apologizes to this person named Flugel.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. Who the Flugel is that?
Yeah. Maybe that is the previous Sloth.
That's
my theory.
I was super surprised one day when that name came up, because like from what I like I remembered from the show, like I don't remember that name coming up anywhere.
No. Yeah, I hadn't heard it either. I also stopped and tried to make sure, like, was there a flugel? I don't know, flugel. Isn't that like an instrument?
Maybe.
I think a flugelhorn is an instrument.
I might have to Google it. But yeah, so either way, in that scene, they pretty much have that fight. We get to meet the Witch of Vanity. Mother Frumshina runs off with Amelia, and Biasu eats the Sloth Factor and becomes strong. He gets his classic hands, and he starts trying to beat up the Witch of Greed. The Witch of Greed. He starts trying to beat up the Archbishop of Greed. It's not going well. and that, like, this is, that's that scene for most part. But like, before we move on to the next scene, so all this is happening, like, you know, Amelia and the Witch of Greed is watching. And first point I'm going to meet, make, man, she is so sly with these backhanded comments. I am so happy. Oh, man, it was like, she was like, oh, your small brain is understanding this now. The Witch of Greed is just on top of her game of talking shit. But yeah, I guess like my thing is like, do you have anything that you want to say about like them watching it? Amelia's definitely recognizing something. I have a theory of what she's recognizing. I will talk about it in probably the next seed. But like, do you have anything about like, you know, at least the interaction between the Witch of Greed and Amelia, other than her fantastic shit talking?
Yeah. It seems that there is something about, and we've seen it before, there's something about Amelia's pendant that has some sort of meaning or some sort of purpose or like thought of its or like mind of its own outside of Puck, like just summoning Puck. Like we've seen in this episode that it seems to point or like be act as some sort of like guide in some way.
This might, I don't know. I have a real theory about this, so I'm excited.
Okay,
I'm probably dead wrong.
We'll see. Second, I have a few things about I was about to say Flugel, about Corneus that I'd like to go over with just so I don't forget.
Okay,
Corneus also has like he has similar eyes to Beltigese. His eyes are like yellowish, sort of like yellowish red, and I'm wondering if that's also an effect of his witch factor.
Maybe. He definitely has some type of power that's similar to Biasu, because like it seems pretty unseen. It seems very deadly, and that seems very like up, at least what we've seen of like the sloth factor. Something that's like kind of super devastating and also super hard to like see if you're normal. The other thing I want to point out about this scene that I was like a little thing, like not frustrated, but like interested in, like, it doesn't seem like the Witch of Greed knows, Corneus, or was his name's Corneus?
Corneus.
It doesn't seem the Witch of Greed knows Corneus, right? Like, she doesn't, like, say or point out or make any indication to Amelia that this person, like, has a connection with her. Like, I guess, like, does the factors have a connection with the witches? I don't know.
We see that it can be stored.
Yeah.
Which is something that we didn't know before. It can be stored. And inside, it could be stored and used. So yeah. Independently of like the, and it not saying it doesn't have like a will of its own, but it can be stored and used in a way that seems to have some sort of distance from the actual witches themselves, who are dead.
Yeah, maybe it's like maybe these factors are just something. It's like, you know, when you kill an enemy in a video game and they drop an item, maybe the factors is that, like, what if you like, once you like kill a someone that has the factor, it like either, so I'm thinking about like this. Every witch gets so powerful enough to get this on this thing called a factor, and the thing, this is like what grants them like an incredible power, like, I don't know, be able to make a dragon go to sleep, or, you know, be able to punch your problems back to health and stuff like that. But once you die, or if you willingly give it up, you lose that factor, and then other people can use like a semblance of that power or whatever. And this is kind of true with the people like get it afterwards. Like, you can either like get it out of your body somehow, or once you die, that like factor gets transferred on to like that person that killed you or something like that.
It's their one for all.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, sorry if I cut you off or anything. Is there anything else you want to say about the scene?
No, no. We can move on.
So yeah, so pretty much Amelia realizes after some convincing by the witch agreed that she should move from this scene of seeing Betelgeuse fight for his life and go to the scene where his mother Fortuna and Amelia, her younger self, is like being carried away to. They get carried away back to like the tree prison. And again, this is another scene where they really emphasize where like promises are super important, or like at least is told to Amelia like it's super important to keep and like cherish. She thinks that this is all happening because she broke her promise and like wasn't a good girl and then stay in the house prison. And they really emphasize like, hey, you know, it's okay. Like, this is important to keep your promise. And I'm going to keep a promise to like, make sure I keep everyone safe. That's what my like Mother Fortuna says. The scene kind of breaks down to like Mother Fortuna gives her off, gives Amelia to the blonde haired elf guy. I don't remember his name.
And, his name is Archie.
Yeah, he gives him off to Archie, and he's like, Archie, run away with Amelia and make sure she doesn't get hurt and don't die. Don't die, Archie. You'll be fine. And he's like, all right. After some convinced, he's like, all right, I can do this. Mother Fortuna makes it pretty clear, like, she's going to go back to, like, protect the seal and stuff like that. And there's also a scene of Amelia breaking down. And she says something super crazy interesting. She says Mother Fortuna was her real mother.
Yeah, I know. Did you have like a literal interpretation of that? How did you get from that? What did you take from it?
Okay, so there's a couple of things. At first, I took it very literally, and then I took the other thing that she said very literally when she's like, take the daughter of my sister's husband, my sister and me away or whatever. She said something like that, and I was like, was this a polyamorous? What's the word? What's the word?
Polygamous.
Yeah, was this a polygamous relationship or something like that? Like, but yeah. And I took it very literally on the first watching. But my thing kind of changed in a way. Okay, this is like where my theory comes in. It's probably dead wrong, but I'm going to say it anyway. So I think Mother Fortuna is Puck, straight up.
Dude, I had gotten that feeling as well.
Yeah, I think either she's either going to be changed into Puck very soon, or she is Puck. And I think it leads into like what you were saying a little bit of like, maybe she's a spirit too. I don't know. But yeah, I definitely think Mother Fortuna is going to be Puck, because of what's going to happen in the next episode, or like it's kind of, or something like was true before, like before this. But I think she's definitely going to be Puck. I think it lines up too well. She has extraordinarily good use of this ice power. I think she's like Mother Fortuna is going to be Puck. Maybe that makes it make more sense of why like Amelia sees her as like a father figure. Oh, this is coming from the music, the movie. Puck, when Puck first like breaks Amelia out of this ice, or Amelia breaks out of this ice or whatever. One of the first things she says is like, Puck, like, are you like my dad or whatever? And Puck's like finds that super funny. And I think either the Witch of Vanity, in light of her power, is going to be the reason that Mother Fortuna turns into Puck, or like at least the reason why, like, if Mother Fortuna was Puck from the like this Puck type of the spirit Puck kind of thing from the beginning, is she's going to like force her to like back into the spirit world, I guess. But I have no idea.
Dang, so that meant Mother Fortuna was the one that... What did she do to Subaru? She, like, cut off his head.
Yes.
And froze him to death. And
yes.
Twice.
Yes.
Damn, that's hard.
Mother Fortuna does not fuck around if she's Puck, because she gives zero fucks about anyone else other than Amelia.
So that means she starts off, because she starts off, there is a point in this conversation where she says, those two breach to the seal, they are going to start the end of the world.
Yeah.
And the way she phrased it was like, this isn't the first time they've tried to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which would be like really interesting if we go from she's trying to prevent the end of the world to she is the end of the world. She is the apocalypse.
The Puck-pocalypse must go on. I think that's super interesting. And like, we just don't know much. We can kind of insinuate that, I think it's a good insinuation that Amelia is the key for this seal. And the Witch of Vanity, Pandora deeds Amelia for this thing to happen. So maybe it's not Amelia is the end of the world, but Amelia can cause it. I have like another theory. I could say it when I say it now or say it later. I can wait and like let us like talk about this scene before we jump into another scene.
Yeah, there's another thing that I noticed. Well, no, I'll bring that up when they start to leave, because that was when I noticed. But yeah, let's move on.
Okay, yeah. Other than the only thing before we like hit the next scene, I just want to say like, I'm surprised that so you see Amelia kind of breaking down, realizing that like Mother Fortuna is her real mom, and you said you didn't take that literally, but so I want to ask you a question about that. I want to see what your interpretation about that is. But before that, like how bad must it been, like her breakdown must have been the time before, like if that makes sense, you know what I'm trying to say? Like, she seems like she's breaking down pretty hard right now. How bad it must have been, like, before? Like, what would you even imagine, if that makes sense?
Well, we know that whatever it was bad enough that she was willing to try to coax Subaru into basically, like, running away with her, but sort of leaning on him in order to not face that trial. Like, we saw the extent of, like, it, the extent of damage it did on her, to the point where it, like, isolated her
from everything. It sort of, it makes her, like, almost completely dependent, makes her completely dependent on Subaru.
Yeah.
Before we move on, I do want to interest, like, how did you interpret it? I interpreted it super literally the first time I watched it.
Yeah, at first I was like, is this literal thing? But then I it seemed to me like it could have just been figurative. Like, it was just, you know, this is the person that was really in my life. You know, these witches, they seem to like just, you know, run away at the slightest inconvenience.
Yeah, the witches are coming off as real deadbeats.
Yeah.
Like, man, like, you guys solve a problem in the worst way. Like, very half-ass here. Yeah, I'm gonna make a way for everyone to eat, but it's gonna murder everybody.
yeah, and watch, when we figure out, like, when Amelia tracks down her mom, and she asks, like, why did you abandon me? I abandoned you because I love you. But I love you so much that it would be selfish to just have you by my own. What if her mom is the Witch of Envy, and that's her reasoning? It's like, I envied you so much, I wanted you so much that I had to let you go, because it's the only way to truly envy something is from far away. because you can't have... Oh, dude, that could be real. That could be real.
Like, you're saying it, and I'm like, this is not a bad theory.
Dude, that totally sounds like yeah. I want things that I can't have. Like, that...
Matt Pat's gonna be so mad about how many anime theories we're throwing out here.
We're gonna get canceled by Matt Pat. He's gonna flag this video.
But yeah, I just want to get your thoughts and stuff like that. But yeah, we can move on to the next scene. So next scene, we see Archery running out of the forest, doing his job, telling Amelia that it's not your fault. It's all cool. But Amelia doesn't believe him. And Archie's like running. It's like, oh man, we're so close. Everything's fine. And then he does that classic, I'm about to get murdered trip. trips. And we get to see the black snake, or I don't know, like, I think this is the black snake's venom based off the movies.
Oh, is it? Oh yeah, you were telling me about the snake
and its
venom.
Yeah, so in the movie, the black snake's venom shows up in the movie and it looks a lot like that.
Hmm. And does its, like, poison look like that, or did you not see his poison?
When I saw the black snake's venom attack a creature, it just engulfed it, and it died. Just straight up. Like, from the movies, the black snake just seems like the gray goo, like stories or whatever. It just kind of eats whatever comes near it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what the venom seems like.
Okay.
I haven't seen the black snake. I don't know if he was there in that episode, but Archie gets tripped up by the black snake and he starts getting poisoned. He's like, oh man, Amelia, I'm cool, just look away. And he's like trying to survive, and he cuts off his own leg so the infection doesn't spread, and then freezes it and tells Amelia to run and just keep running past like that path. And I'm guessing this gets her out of sanctuary. And, you know, Archie does all that, but that doesn't help. The infection's like, I work faster than cut off your leg. That doesn't work. I'm like Itachi's flame. I just keep going. And it at least seems that he dies because of this, because it's like orange disease type kind of thing. Or Mark's like clogging up his body.
Do you think this is the sanctuary? Do you think this takes place in the sanctuary?
No, it doesn't take place of the sanctuary, but whatever place they lived was very similar to the sanctuary. And I'm assuming it has like a way out, very similar how like Subaru can leave the sanctuary pretty easily, if that makes sense.
Okay. Did you make anything of the line that Archie says right before he dies, where he says, like, no, it's not true, this isn't your fault, the world, like, exists to see you smile. Like, right as he died. He said that, like, right immediately he died. Or not yeah. bad. He right immediately the
that was the beginning of the end.
Gets him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
like, no, it's okay. Amelia, the world wants to see you smile. Then the freaking venom comes out and takes his leg.
It's like the Dave Chappelle thing. He's like, gotcha, bitch.
Yeah.
Based on the movie and based off the spirit you meet in the movie, I think Archie's lying here. I think the world sees there's definitely spirits in the world, or like other factors in the world that truly sees Amelia's existence as the catalyst to the end of the world, and she's like a sin to even exist. And I think this might make sense, right? If Amelia is the key to the seal, right? If Amelia dies, there's no key to the seal to like unlock this catastrophe, you know what I'm trying to say? But like in the movie, like all this is happening afterwards, so it's still very like, why, dude, are you coming at this girl so hard? But probably it might be explained in next episode. And, you know, I have another theory when we get to the end of this episode. That might maybe make it make sense more, I guess.
Yeah. Well, first, I just want to point out there is something that Amelia does not have at this present moment.
What does she not have?
She doesn't have her pendant. What does that mean? Is what I've been thinking about. What does that mean for her not to have that pendant? Does whatever happens to her, however she gets placed in the ice or that crystal, has something to do with her getting that pendant? And which seems to point, like, what we've been talking about, like, maybe that has something to do with whatever happens to Mother Fortuna. Like, there definitely seems like there could be a connection there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, next scene, we go back to Bierstu, and he is not having a great time. He's taking that work from I keep forgetting dude's name.
Cornius.
From Cornius. And right before he's about to, like, get finished off, let me take a step back. Cornius is getting really worked up with this, and Pandora, the witch, is kind of, like, trying to calm him down a little bit. He's like, oh, yeah, you're perfect. But, you know, everyone else is special because they're imperfect or whatever. And he's, like, kind of not having it. He's kind of very frustrated, and it seems like he's trying his hardest not to kill Bierstu, but really wants to kill Bierstu. And do you think that's just, do you think he's not doing it just because, like, he is this new sloth position, or do you think it's just because, like, the Witch of Vanity is, like, telling him not to do it, I guess?
I thought he wanted to kill her. I thought he wanted to kill Beetlejuice. I mean, he goes as far as to kill the Witch of Vanity, or to try to kill the Witch of Vanity in order to get away from that, so he could kill them.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I don't know. I don't know. I was just wondering if he was trying to be, like, a little bit more restrained, but his anger got madder and madder because, you know, Mother Fortuna comes out of the blue and throws a big chunk of ice at him and be like, stop it. Stop hurting my boo, pretty much.
I'll die for you.
Pretty much. Mother Fortuna is kind of like mini confesses to Bierstu and says, like, she, like, depends on him as well. They pretty much, like, commit to fighting. They commit to fighting Cornius in this fight, like, not even in this fight, but as this is, like, starting to get kicked off or whatever, like, the Witch of Vanity kind of, like, steps in and she's like, hey, man, you shouldn't do this. Let's stop the violence. Love and peace. He just snaps and loses this and literally turns this girl into dust.
Yeah, did you notice that, like, when before he did that, there was, like, a tiny, like, thing of dust that he ended up kicking up? And, like, you could kind of see from, like, whatever sort of force he's exhibiting on, like, the invisible force, you could kind of see what happened a little bit.
I did not see that.
Yeah. What, like, did it look like? Bullets. Which is weird, because that does seem a little bit different from the first episode we see him, where he looks like he just has, like, this giant, like, invisible cannon sort of thing. Like when he uses it to take out the when he uses his powers to take out the caravan.
Dude, I you know what this is reminding me of? Have you seen Fate Zero or any of the Fate series anime?
I've seen Fate Stay Zero.
Or Fate, you've seen Fate, yeah. So Fate have Zero. You know Gilgamesh's power?
No.
So, like, Gilgamesh's power from at least the Fate Zero stuff or the Fate Stay Night, whichever Fate we're talking about, is generally he has the ability to make swords, but, like, he could shoot them out, like not like guns, but, like, he can, like, propel swords, as many swords as he wants, at his enemies. Like, he can just raise his hand and, like, 80 swords just shoots at people and, like, impales them. And it remind me of, like, the Archbishop of Greed's power is, like, really reminding me of that. I can easily imagine it being, like, a whole bunch of, like, swords or pointy objects just, like, slamming down onto, like, victims and stuff like that. And, like, even the way, like, how he blocks himself reminded me of the scene in Gilgamesh where, in one of the Fate series where Gilgamesh was, like, shooting himself, but just, like, throwing a whole bunch of swords in front of him. But yeah, that's what I was thinking his power was kind of like, where it's like a whole bunch of swords just appears above a person and then just shoots out at him.
What's up with the like the murder scene for the Witch of Vanity? Like, she doesn't just die, she dies.
It's not ambiguous at all. This person was pretty solidly destroyed. I think it's just pretty much to get it across where it's like this person got obliterated. And like this scene kind of happens multiple times because Mother Fortune, it makes it seem pretty clear that Mother Fortune kills her with her strike at the beginning too. But you know, what's that against the power of narration? The power of narration is way stronger.
I wonder if that's why Vanity is alive. Because Envy seems to have murdered all the other witches.
Oh, that is true.
I have another theory that Vanity is the one person that summoned Subaru into the world, but I'm going to watch a little bit more until I make my full judgment on that.
Okay.
She seems to be the only person that could seems most likely to be able to do that based on her powers of narration.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, we've been bound around the bush about this, but so she gets destroyed or whatever. The Archbishop of Greed is going to, like, kill Mother Fortuna and Biasu. And she just comes back and she's like, first off, she sticks him down into the ground like a carrot with just her hand just chilling or whatever. She's just like, hey, you know, you should leave now. And like the Archbishop of Greed is like, how dare you bring me here and then tell me to leave? I'm not leaving. And she's like, all right, man, if you don't want to leave, I'll do it. And she just literally says like, hey, what's the dude's name again? I'm going to keep forgetting this. Cornelius is like, she says like, Cornelius is at home at his mansion with his wives. And that motherfucker just disappears.
Which, like, he's just also gone. Yeah. Which also like kind of gives us some more information. Like, I thought we sort of came to the conclusion that the witch cult was somewhere underground, but Cornelius has a mansion.
Yeah.
So how underground is this cult?
Could it just be like another city state?
It could be. He could just own his own city state. That would go along with him being greedy.
Maybe like there's a church. The church is like the Vatican in a way where it's like he lives in a city. There's a city that exists that is basically the church, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, and like the other thing with this, not only does he disappear, all his effects disappear too. He does like he cuts off Biasu's arm in like a previous scene, and since Pandora says this, Biasu gets his arm back, and she kind of explains it as like, hey, since he wasn't here, that him cutting off your arm didn't happen. Like, she literally like rewrote history. She retconned it. She retconned it harder than Star Wars. And like she even says like she could, like, she even insinuates that she could take back like Beetlejuice like eating the salt factor as well, but she does not want to take that back.
Yeah. She uses that good old power of rewriting and writing. Man, she should have been on Rewrite, the other anime.
Like, re-erase?
No, is it called Rewrite? The one where you told me about where it's, like, the people from the, like, the writers and the people, characters they've written.
No, you mean Recreators.
Never mind. Rewrite is the name of a show I'm making about writers that get trapped in a different world.
Is there a charismatic teacher that teaches these kids the meaning of life, like in Dead Poet Society? But yeah, it's this person's super powerful, and I think you made a very solid point there. Maybe this person is the only witch that survived the Witch of Envy because of this like incredible power of like controlling the narrative. But yeah, I don't know. I find that character super interesting, and I want to figure out what her deal is and why hasn't she shown up yet in like the real time.
Could she have written herself out of existence? Out of the minds of people?
I can't see why not. She seems super powerful.
I know, that's sort of like the gluttony archbishop's power.
Yeah.
When he eats people and like that erases their whole entire existence.
Which is a pretty fucked up power.
Yeah. Do you think Vanity's in charge?
I don't think she's in charge, but she's definitely in charge of all the archbishops. She definitely outranks them. There's maybe someone above her. Maybe this Fugu guy. What's was that the right pronunciation?
It was Flugel.
Maybe Fugel is above her. Maybe just because like that person's name was thrown out. But I think she definitely outranks all the archbishops. And I think she is probably pretty powerful in this church thingy.
Yeah, but not powerful enough not to kill. Or not to try to kill.
Well, like, does she even need that power? She seems like she has the power to just...
Oh, I'm talking about when Cornelius, like, annihilated her.
Oh. Well, she said she forgives him for doing that.
Yeah, but he's it doesn't if she was the head of the religion, he probably wouldn't have acted that way. Yeah.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
She seemed to Cornelius more disposable than I would have thought seemed would make sense for the witch cult. It could just be because he's the Archbishop of Greed. He just gives no fucks.
Yeah. He's perfect.
Yes, he is just so perfect.
Yeah. I see that. That makes sense. But also,
could Cornelius be an elf? The only people you've seen with white hair are elves, and he has white hair.
Can Cornelius be an elf?
Yeah, and we can't see his ears because his ears are covered by his hair.
I see no reason why he can't be an elf.
I wonder if that will have any relevance to the story later on.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we'll see. We'll see. So moving on. We kind of get to like the final scene. Amelia gets guided. She makes it out of this place or whatever. And she gets guided. She pretty much comes up with the bright idea to go to the seal to help solve stuff. And the spirits takes her to the seal. And, you know, she makes it over there. And guess who's over there? Pandora. Just chilling.
Idea of the year.
She's a kid. It's a dumb idea, but you know, she's a kid. It makes some sense.
Don't trust random spirit fairies
that can control the narrative.
Yeah, didn't your mother ever tell you not to trust random ass spirits.
Yeah, so but yeah, she's there, and that's where it ends. It pretty much just says like, hey, it's like she says like, oh, I was expecting you. Like I've been waiting for you. That's what she says.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this kind of leads into my like my last theory. I think Amelia is the key for this seal, and I think the key is this something similar to the either it is like the Witch of Envy, like consciousness, essence, or whatever you want to call it, could be like her factor or whatever, and that's what's in the seal. And if Amelia breaks the seal, she pretty much becomes the Witch of Envy. And that's my theory. Like, it's like breaking that seal will cause Amelia to become, like, take on this, like, title of the Witch of Envy. Like, the seal is just containing the witch.
I think you're right. That's a pretty reasonable hypothesis.
Those are my theories for so far. What do you rate this episode?
8.5. I would give it 10, but there weren't any whales. It was only a tiny slime. I was so disappointed. I'm glad that you told me that's not the true face of the snake, because I was like, dude, after such good like monster art for the last like two beasts that we've seen, to just have this like stupid blob. I was like so pissed off because of that, but like that's the only reason it's getting 8.5. You know, and also just there was just so much information to follow.
Yeah. I don't know for sure, but like, yeah, I believe all that is technically just like the snake's venom. Yeah, I'll give it 8 ice shards that kill your enemy out of 10. Yeah, I think this episode's pretty good. I think there was a lot of information. It definitely picked up like I wanted to. It was just way faster than I expected. And I think it's a really good episode. I just think I wish I got a little bit more explanation. But I'm glad that, you know, we learn that, you know, we could probably infer that, you know, there are more witches outside of the 7 witches that we have met so far. And, you know, these witches outside of the 7 might be really, really strong, or at least one of them is definitely really, really strong.
Yeah.
Let's go on to predictions. What do you predict that's going to happen next episode, Roscoe?
I think we're going to get a third tea party meeting.
Ooh.
I don't think this is going to happen next episode. I do think we're going to get the third tea party meeting at some time. I think you're right. We're going to find out what Puck's connection is to Mother Fortuna, if there is one. I think we're going to find out how Amelia gets the shard for a pendant. We're going to understand a little bit more about what the plan is for the sanctuary. We're going to see the Witch of Greed be a terrible mother. Right after we start to believe that she's a good person, she's going to fool us all again for another time. We're going to be like, oh man, you know what? Greed is like the nicest character. You know what? She's top number one for waifu. Nobody who those were as actual words.
What? Was that my actual words?
Pretty much. You're like, man, she's kind of giving Rim a run for her money.
I don't think I said that, but I wouldn't be surprised if I said that. Hey, man, I didn't know she was evil. It's hard to tell.
This should be like a real thing, but she wore all black, man. what TV show where somebody dresses like a goth, are they ever the good person? Good guy.
Raven.
Oh, true. You know what? Yeah, Raven is good, is a good goth representation. That's good goth representation right there.
Yeah, okay. For my predictions, I think Mother Fortuna is going to turn into Puck next episode. I think that Amelia is definitely going to be frozen in ice. And that's going to be the minor stuff that happens in that episode. The major stuff I think is going to happen is going to be a conversation with Amelia and the Witch of Greed. And I think they're going to really kind of go at it. And I think Amelia is going to try to figure out why the Witch of Greed hates her so much. It's probably obvious, but I think she's going to actually like dig down and like dig in her heels and like really demand respect from this person. I'm pretty sure the Witch of Greed is going to try to pick on her some more as she's like, you know, emotionally unstable, but like fragile, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens.
Excited.
Yeah. Thank you, Roscoe, for talking to me and talking about the show. I know you're tired. It's pretty late. Well, thank you, audience. If there is audience, if you're listening to this, you might be the only person listening to this. And if you did, congratulations. You literally beat the algorithm. You beat statistics. So, yeah. You know, you should give yourself a pat on the back.
I just want to say that that nobody is being super it is not super late. It's like we're recording this around like 10:50, almost 11. I'm just very old. I just have a very old body. And now that I'm getting older, I have the spryness of a 70-year-old who was very happy that you decided to watch our show and make it to the end.
Yeah. Well, do you have anything else to say?
Like it if you liked it. If you don't like it, don't like it. Don't dislike it. Just move on with the rest of your life. Subscribe if you want to subscribe. Comment if you have better ideas than us about what's going on. Don't comment if you know what's going to happen.
Yeah, if you have any good theories and you don't know exactly what's going to happen with us and you somehow listen to this, yeah, definitely leave your theories in the below. I would love to read them.
You know, I'm not going to read them just because I know if somebody does watch this, there's going to be one person that's just going to put in a spoiler just to ruin our day.
Maybe. You got to believe the internet first. You got to believe. And then the internet will crush your soul. All right. Well, thank you for listening. Take it easy.